And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Thursday, January the 19th, 2017, day before Inauguration Day, 2:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're tuned into the Now program, and I want to thank our guests from earlier on today, legendary newsman from the Today Show, and 2020 U Downs, and legendary actor from the movies Beethoven and Rosemary's Baby, as well as many appearances on the Johnny Carson and David Letterman show, Charles Grodin. So we thank Charles Grodin and U Downs for being on in the first 2 hours today. Now we go to a state story this hour. A gentleman who's going to be joining us has joined us twice in the past. We've done 4 hours with him, and it's always a pleasure. He's one of the kindest people, has always been one of the kindest people to me, that when I call and ask him to do something, he is willing to do it, just as he is today. And he will be speaking with us via telephone momentarily. But I want to let you know why he's on today. There was a story, which I'm sure you've all seen. The Columbus television stations and newspapers covered it yesterday. So I'll just give you the background before we get to the guest today. And I'm going to give it to you just as it's written. The Ohio State University says Jonathan Waters, former director of the school's marching band and athletic bands, has voluntarily dismissed all his claims against the university, including all appeals. This is in exchange for the university not seeking to recover costs from him. Waters was fired in July 2014 for ignoring a sexualized culture inside what's known to fans as the best damn band in the land. He denied wrongdoing and sued for reinstatement and damages, alleging reverse gender discrimination. The university's communications department released the following statement Wednesday. Jonathan Waters, former director of the Ohio State University Marching and Athletic Bands, has voluntarily dismissed all of his claims against the university, including all appeals, in exchange for the university not seeking to recover its costs from him, as OSU would be entitled to do as the prevailing party. The decision by Mr. Waters to terminate his two pending cases leaves in place the prior rulings of the U.S. District Court in Columbus and the Ohio Court of Claims, which both found against Mr. Waters. Ohio State is pleased this litigation is now concluded and all parties can move forward. Waters has not yet released a statement. Well, I am pleased to tell you that joining me via telephone, the band director for the Heidelberg University and a good friend of this program, John Waters. John, how are you?
I'm great, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. And before we get to this story, how are things going at Heidelberg? The last time we talked, you were getting ready to go there. How are things?
You know, Heidelberg has been, for me, a beautiful blank canvas to paint a new musical picture on. We've had a tremendous fall with the creation of a marching band, something that was in hiatus at the university for over 25 years, and revitalizing that program, as well as, you know, just being constituent in the great community of Tiffin and being a member of the teaching faculty at Heidelberg has been just a tremendous experience for me and, you know, a wonderful chance at reclamation of my career and what I love to do, which is teaching students and teaching music.
Great. So a happy ending on that behalf.
Absolutely.
Okay, John, yesterday this story was released. I guess, why did you drop the lawsuits?
Well, you know, we looked at the situation and decided that after 2.5 years, it was time. And I will say that, the whole thing to me, I think, is bittersweet. On one hand, the very positive aspects are the fact that I think the public and, the person on the street looking at this story and hearing about it discovered early on that the university painted its own marching band in such a terrible light. And so we were able to tell that story and to hopefully stand up for and to, in some ways, rehabilitate the reputation of the university's alumni and the current band students, as well as my own. So that, you know, from that aspect, from a PR standpoint, I think everyone knows that I was used as a scapegoat for the university and some, you know, other issues that it had. The unfortunate part of the story is the fact that we didn't get our chance to tell that story in a courtroom with a jury. And we didn't get that opportunity because the, you know, the legal process said that you know, our case was such that we couldn't do that. And so, you know, I'm no legal scholar. I'm no expert in the law. But, you know, I let that legal process play out. And, you know, we were just to the point where we decided that it was time to move on.
Did you feel that the cases that were still pending would have not turned out for you because of this not having a jury?
I think that based upon the merits which I felt we had in the case, that the general public saw, I think that we had the moral high ground, certainly. And I think while the judges in this case, both the state and the federal, believed the Ohio State attorneys, I still contend that had we gotten to the point where we were in a courtroom and were able to present evidence around this whole story, that we would have certainly prevailed. But, you know, to do that, it was just tremendously, tremendously expensive. You know, you look at the amount of money that both Ohio State and we spent on this whole thing, and it's really disheartening because the only people who really made any money in this situation are the attorneys. You know, there are no more scholarship dollars for students at Ohio State in the band, but the pockets of the attorneys, you know, are a little fuller now, and so, you know, from that standpoint, that is unfortunate. But it was, you know, the conversation that we asked to have with the university early on, a couple months before we took legal action, the university declined to have. They declined to have that that story or that conversation around the table. They declined our repeated efforts to talk about the entire thing and talk about how they grossly mischaracterized the students in the band and its 4,500 living alumni. And so we had to take legal action to try to get that story told. And as I said, from a public relations standpoint, we did tell that story indeed. And, you know, just from the legal aspects and the legal theory, we were not able to finish that quest.
So this simply sounds, and if I'm saying this wrong, please correct me, that it just was costing too much money, that if you had unlimited resources, that you would have continued on.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and unfortunately we were, you know, if you look at the situation, it was truly a David and Goliath situation. You have the university, a multi-billion dollar corporation with unlimited taxpayer resources versus, you know, a private citizen who, you know, is no match in terms of money for an entity like Ohio State.
That being said, one thing, obviously the communications statement, the communications department released this statement after the story came out on Wednesday. In that statement, they say that they had decisions in two prior rulings. Now, I know people know what initially happened, the sexualized culture, and you were let go, and there was a lawsuit. What rulings did they have going in?
Well, so there were two legal cases, one in the federal court and one in the state court. And Scott, I know I'm a band director, but I know more about the legal process than probably I should at this point. But what I do know is that you can only sue for certain things, certain reliefs in certain courts. And so some of the contentions that we had could only be sought relief for in the state court, and then certain others could only be in the federal court. So we did have two cases going, one in the state court of claims, one in the federal court. And so the judge and through the work of the Ohio State attorneys pared down the federal case to a very specific aspect of a greater number of complaints that we had, they were eventually victorious in that the judge said that the case could not go forward for trial, and then for reasons cited in the opinion of the state court judge, the state court said that it would not hear our case for defamation in that courtroom as well.
Do you think, being a part of it at one point, being a part of the Ohio State University, not only that they have a tremendous amount of resources, do you think in a court in Ohio going in that means something?
That's an interesting point. I think certainly Ohio State is known throughout the state. We've even experienced it a little bit with media outlets in their reporting of our story, that Ohio State spends a lot of advertising dollars with those media outlets. And I'd like to think that the court proceeding here was blind of that, but certainly the reach and influence of Ohio State is vast, and they do have a lot of influence in the state of Ohio.
That's an interesting point, and we all understand that universities do, and other political candidates, they buy time on stations. In your particular case, because one thing not having a pending case anymore does free you to talk about truthful things. How do you feel the media, during this whole thing, the last 2.5 years, played out against you in the media?
I think there were certain... I have to say, let me just generalize and then I'll be more specific. I have to say that in general, I believe the media, as the larger media, treated us with fairness throughout the entire process. In fact, they did, I think, do a good job of telling both sides of the stories. Where things became apparent that there was some conversation with the media is Ohio State's got a vast media relations department. And, I'm sure daily that those folks were reaching out to these various media outlets, saying, hey, cut us some slack here, especially as the tide of public opinion turned against the university and toward us. Polling done in Columbus, Ohio, were in the 90% on my side and the single digits on the side of the and so that's how we knew the tide of public opinion had turned. But I think with the university and its advertising dollars and its long reach, they certainly have influence over the media and what is reported and how it is reported. And we found you know, evidence of that as we went through this process.
Let me ask you this, because I think it's important for anybody else who might face anything like this. The broad scope, because this did become a national story, you feel the media treated you fairly. When we look at Columbus, which I would imagine, I have no statistic to back this up, but is probably where the majority of the advertising dollars are spent in the local television and newspaper and maybe radio markets, certainly in that area, do you feel in Columbus, Ohio, four television stations, we obviously know what the big paper is down there, the Dispatch, do you not think you were treated fairly by those institutions?
You know, I think by some, yes, and by others, perhaps not as as fairly. You know, what Ohio State did in this whole story is they took 50 years of history with the band and conjecture and stories that that a very small group of people told them. And then they conflated all those stories, and they conflated it just during the time that I was the director of the band. And then furthermore, they shadowed in darkness, I think, the true overall culture of the students in that band and the true overall culture of the students there that has been there for many, many years. Many generations of students have gone through that band and have done great things. You know, the every time there was a sports team that came home with after winning a championship, there was a band there to greet them as they got off the bus. Every time a corporate partner with the athletic department was opening a new store, there was always a pep band there at the grand opening. Any time that there was, you know, the world's greatest Ohio State fan who was, you know, on their deathbed and going to succumb to cancer and wanted to hear Carmen, Ohio one more time before they died, the band was there. you know, the partnerships that we had with the Ohio State School for the Blind marching band, the partnerships that we had with community organizations, the Gladden Community House, and so many other outreach arms that I put into place, actually with the marching band, went totally unnoticed and actually shadowed by the university in its report. And so by doing this, the university painted a picture that was inaccurate, and then they managed to interview only about 8 or 9 people of a population of almost 5,000 alums and current students about the state of affairs and the culture within the band. And you know, and to say that a whole group of people is sexualized, you know, Scott, I got to tell you, you know, saying that a group of college students age 18 to 22 years old is a sexualized group in a pejorative way is almost like saying the sky is blue. You know, college students think about those things quite often. And just the seedy and dirty way that the university painted its own students and its own alums, and ultimately me, was, I think, beyond the pale. And I think it backfired on them in the media, and, you know, people knew what was up. They knew that I was made the scapegoat. They knew that what they were saying about the band was not true. And exaggerated and conflated, and people saw right through what the university was saying, I think, from a very early point.
I do want to just have two more quick questions here about the media before we move on to something else, and because I think they are important. In this entire episode, the last 2.5 years, what was the worst thing that you felt because, unfortunately, the media is what gets it out. Ohio State can claim something, but it's the media that reports on it. What is the worst mischaracterization, and who did it, when did it happen, that was put out by the media, maybe started at Ohio State, that bothered you the most?
You know, I think one of the things that Ohio State did, which had really nothing to do with its report, was to take a partial recording from a student, whom I was disciplining, and to broadcast and to release to the media that that partial recording. And it was me at a heated moment with a student who had broken band policy and who had shown great disrespect to then the associate director of the band, and it, you know, it caught me at a moment where I was very upset with the student and disciplining the student, and they used that to paint a caricature of me that was just not right. And you know, those who know me know that was not my, you know, a true characterization of who I am. And you know, the fact that you know, sports coaches and other folks you know, use some harsh language sometimes fell on deaf ears. And I think it was a bit hypocritical of the university to release that, but yet not release, for instance, a recording of an athletics coach, you know, yelling at a team because he or she was heated at the moment. So that was probably, I think, the most egregious thing to me that the university did, and it painted a caricature of me that was just false. And of course, you know, it demonized me through its report the entire time, as to say inappropriate behavior around the band only occurred under my leadership and not before and not after. And, you know, everybody knew that was false as well.
Not to say that Ohio State is wrong for doing that, but by that point, they were certainly involved in a legal case with you, or they knew there was some friction there. They released that to the media. Do you blame the media? Do you feel it was, and I don't know who did run it, I don't know if all three stations ran it or who ran that clip, but do you blame the media for running it? Because if they hadn't, highly unlikely it would have got mass exposure.
You know, I don't blame the media because that's part of the story. I will say that was released before, well before, a couple of months before we took legal action against the university. You know, I was not only fired and humiliated nationally, but then right after that they released this partial audio. And you know, there was more to the recording that did not get released by the university, and so you know the propaganda arm of the university you know, wanted to get its story out and paint me and demonize and villainize me as much as it possibly could. But again, those who know me and those who know the band knew the real story.
And the final question about the media and this whole thing, when I started out, I read the statement that Ohio State has released, and it's on most of the television stations' websites in Columbus today. And at the bottom, it does say Waters has not yet released a statement. Have they contacted you?
Well, you know, I don't know what media account you were looking at, but it is interesting that the Columbus Dispatch did contact me yesterday, and I returned their phone call and I returned their emails, and they didn't ever call me back, yet they ran the story, their story, without my comment in the morning, this morning, in this morning's paper. And so there were some other, the student newspaper on campus, the Lantern, as well as the AP, both contacted me, and I gave statements to them yesterday. But when I called the dispatch back yesterday afternoon and emailed them back, they chose, I guess, not to contact me. So,
and up till this point, have they contacted you?
No.
Okay. And just to be fair, where I was reading that was WCMH's website. It was their story.
Channel 4.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe you can fact check this, but it's interesting through this process that a couple of Channel 4 folks are now employees of Ohio State, interestingly. So, you'd have to fact check that, but I think some former Channel 4 folks are now working for the university.
Interesting. John, one thing I want to bring up, because in the interviews we've done, and I've always enjoyed them, we did one not too long after your firing. One of the things you always said, because you've used the term many times, you've used it twice today, and you used it a lot during the interviews we did before, was that you were a scapegoat.
Yeah.
And of course, my question always was, a scapegoat for who? And during the past two interviews, you said you couldn't comment because there was legal proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
There are no longer. Who were you the scapegoat for?
Well, I am a little bit reluctant, I think, to get into the gory details, but let me just say this. The federal government put out a dear colleague letter to a number of universities, and Ohio State was under investigation for some issues it had in regard to Title IX and violations of Title IX as the Obama administration saw them and interpreted them as violations. And I think what the Obama administration unfortunately has done in my case and with Title IX is they have deputized universities to be the judge, jury, and executioner for cases involving Title IX, where I see Title IX as a law enforcement issue that should be dealt with by law enforcement. And so the university got this dear colleague letter. It had been under investigation for, I think, 4 or 5 years for some issues that it had within the university, I think within maybe the athletic department, with some teams there and some other university issues. And so my issue came along, my case came along, and I feel that it provided for them the opportune moment to use the band and to offer the band up as the scapegoat for its Title IX issues that were put on it by the Obama administration's Department of Education. And so throughout this entire multiple-year investigation of the university, and we tried to get into that with our legal case, but we're ultimately not able to get to all of that because we couldn't get to a courtroom. The university and its Title IX issues suddenly, 2 or 3 weeks after my firing, there's a letter from the Department of Education to the university, absolving it from all wrongdoing with regard to Title IX. I may be generalizing, but basically, by the way, we're free and clear now, and everything's fine at Ohio State now.
Hmm.
And that happened just maybe three weeks after I was fired from the university. And it's a bit fishy to me, I would say, that a multiple-year investigation of the university and Title IX violations suddenly wrapped up when they fired the band director. And, that doesn't pass the smell test either. So you know, that's my opinion, of course. And, you know, through our investigation, we have seen some evidence that supports that.
Let me ask you this, John, because I want to put in context the time of this thing, when it all started, 2014. Mm-hmm. A rocky year for Ohio State. In the course, in the year prior to that, to your being fired, head football coach Jim Tressel had been asked to resign. President of the university, Gordon Gee, had been asked to resign. In past years, or in past interviews, you had said to me that you felt if President Gee had still been there, that this would not have happened. The only person in that entire tier, yourself, President Gee, Coach Tressel, that remained was Gene Smith, the athletic director.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you put him in this? And he's still there to this day.
Right. You know, Gene is an interesting player in all of this, and I think he's remained, in our case, under the radar because he's been able to, because of the band's relationship with the School of Music and the College of the Arts, I think Gene has sort of been able to hold at arm's length his relationship to the band. You know, I'm not going to point fingers and say that it was Gene Smith who did all this. There have certainly been people who have accused him in his role in all of this. But I think there are others too in the university who are guilty of having kind of an agenda in mind and seeking to see that agenda met in all of this. I don't think you can put all the blame just, for instance, on Gene Smith. I think he and other administrators, though, are complicit in a lot of this. And my original comment about Gordon Gee, had he been around, I truly believe that none of this would have happened. Gordon had a different way of dealing with things, and I think, had the ability, the executive experience, the leadership capability to step into a situation and to say, all right, everyone, let's really get around the table and talk about this. Let's talk about what the issues are. Let's interview more than four band members and five alumni band members. Let's really get to the heart of this. And I think, you know, Michael Drake was ill-advised by the people around him. He had just started in the job. There were some folks who had an axe to grind. And I think that Michael Drake was perhaps led incorrectly by some. He ultimately made the decision, and I don't absolve him from his involvement in this, but I think he was just ill-advised and let others deal with it instead of stepping in and being a leader and an honest and upright person. He let kind of others lead him to a decision. He also told a group of squad leaders from the marching band that this had nothing to do with them, and I think that he was trying to assuage them that what had happened was past issues. That was his messaging to the squad leaders. And, what had happened in the past was during the time that I was not the director of the band. I think just a total leadership failure on many fronts in all of this. And not any one person necessarily complicit in this, but just the failure of a chief executive to step in and to cool the temperature of a situation and get everyone around the table and talk about it and talk to the students. You know, every one of those students in the band should have been addressed and should have talked to the university administration before any decision was made. But unfortunately, they were not. My colleagues in the School of Music should have been spoken to, but they tell me that they were not spoken to by the administration.
Let me ask you this question, because, like I say, at that point, President Gee was gone, Coach Tressel was gone, and as you say, we can't point all fingers at Gene Smith here, or would we even want to do that? But when everything was going down, somebody who definitely carried some weight at Ohio State, and really the only one left at that time who carried that amount of weight, was Gene Smith. Does it bother you that he or anybody else didn't speak up for you, that maybe it would have mattered?
Yeah, that does bother me. Gene, on occasion, stepped onto a band bus over his years as athletic director, and certainly many of his subordinates rode to and from places with us on the buses. That we rode with the cheerleading team, we rode with other coaches, and as well my colleagues in the School of Music rode those same band buses, and this is where they allege this quote unquote sexualized culture occurred, that inappropriate activity would have occurred on a bus. Now, all those folks, Gene Smith's folks, School of Music folks, College of Arts and Sciences folks, other band staff, all of these people, former directors, all of these people rode these band buses, and nobody ever said that there was an issue, and in fact, the story that didn't get told, I think, in all this is the fact that I was the culture reformer. I never admitted that there was not a problem of culture in the band. There were issues in the band that were vestiges of culture from 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, and 60 years ago. But that was all laid at my feet. Things that happened before I was born were laid at my feet. And so I think it was tremendously hypocritical for all of these people who were around the band and who went to bowl games and away football games and rode buses and airplanes and all of those things, all of those people who were around the band and knew the band, allowed the university and its protectionist folks in the legal department and in other areas to tell a story that was just patently false.
John, we have about 10 minutes left here, and I want to cover this ground. You were on this show, as I say, I believe the date was September 2014, the first time, just a few months after you were let go. And I asked you about the lawsuit at that time, and we have a clip from that program. I want you to listen to that, and then we'll come back and get your feelings 2 years later.
Sure.
And here's that clip. From what I understand, the defamation lawsuit is a million-dollar lawsuit. I think that's what's been reported. Who knows if that's correct or not. But if they said, John, we made a mistake just like you said, come on back, would you drop the lawsuit?
We'd have to consider all the pros and cons, because of water over the dam, so to speak. If they would say, yeah, come on back, let's let cooler heads prevail, absolutely, I would get rid of the lawsuit. The lawsuit was just a means by which we could open the conversation with the university. And as again I say, that all I have is my honor and my word and my reputation, and that's what I'm fighting for. And certainly, in doing so, I'm fighting for the reputations of all those alums and students who've been, misrepresented by this whole thing.
Being that this is a defamation lawsuit, obviously you feel they have defamed you in some way. When people see John Waters today, what do you think the interpretation is because of what went down?
You know, I think, and it's borne out every time I walk into the grocery store or you know, in public, you know, people say, you got the short end of the stick. You were the scapegoat. You know, person after person tells me that.
Very interesting there, John. You had said that it was important to get your reputation back and not settle. Today, how do you feel?
Well, you know, as I said before, Scott, I feel bittersweet about the entire process. I feel that the legal process didn't work out in the way that we wanted it to work out. The PR process, however, I think did ultimately prove that I was made the scapegoat. And I really don't feel any differently today than I did back then about that. And having gone through this process, I wouldn't wish it on anyone, certainly. But I think that but having gone through the process and having to examine life and to redefine myself, rebuild my reputation, rebuild my career, that has been a hard job, but something that I'm very fortunate to have been able to do thus far, and I thank God every day that you know, I have the chance to be back in this business and to be teaching students and making music.
I want to read the first letter of this statement from the Ohio State Communications Director released yesterday once again. Jonathan Waters, former director of the Ohio State University Marching and Athletic Bands, has voluntarily dismissed all his claims against the university, including all appeals, in exchange for the university not seeking to recover its costs from him, as OSU would be entitled to do as the prevailing party. When you hear that, does it make you happy? Any feeling toward that at all? The prevailing party?
Well, you know, in our society, and certainly at Ohio State in a big way, it's all about winners and losers, isn't it? Whether it's on the football field or the basketball court or, you know, in the courtroom. I think to some of those folks, it is about winners and losers, and winning at all costs, I think, is, you know, important to some. So, I think it's a little bit of, you know, a dance in the end zone a bit by the university, but, you know, I'm not offended by it. I come to expect that.
5 minutes left. I have three quick questions for you. Do you have any regrets in the last 2.5 years?
You know, I really don't, other than having to, having to go through the process. Having to rebuild my life. You know, I had my dream job. I saw myself spending the rest of my career at Ohio State and doing great things with our great students and the alums and the university community and the band family. I saw myself there for a long time. And when that's suddenly gone and all you have is you know, those who love you around you, and nothing, no career, no, it's just all gone instantly. It's a sobering experience, and so I regret that. I regret having to go through that, and I regret tremendously that my family has been put through this, and I regret that every time we're out somewhere, somebody comes up to us and says, "Hey, you're that guy." And, you know, I regret that because, you know, instead of being able to serve the band family, you know, with great enthusiasm for the rest of my career at Ohio State, I was removed from that situation. And having to rebuild is you know, it's a daunting task. That said, I wouldn't do anything else differently. Our story from the very beginning has remained the same. The fact that you know, as I've said many times, the university maligned its own students and alums and its through this was a hard thing to swallow, a hard thing. But I had to understand that the university was going to try to protect itself in whatever misguided way it felt it had to. I will also say that I truly learned who my friends were in all of this, and the friends that I thought I had at Ohio State, and the friends that I found out I had at Ohio State. Lots of people headed for the hills when this happened to me, and there were a very few wonderful group of people who surrounded me with their love and their support. And then the others went on, marching down the field and making sure that the university looked good on TV. And I hate to even say it that way, but that has been a disappointment to me that we were treated in such a way, and I had to find out in that way who my friends were and who my friends were not.
You mentioned that it's now been a popular phrase, sexualized culture in the band, went on long before you, and you were trying to change it. Do you think it goes on today? Is it just something you can't eliminate?
Well, I think there's a built-in culture with kids that are 18 to 22 years old. Our society is, you could call, sexualized. And, I don't even like to use the word sexualized culture. But, again, to call a group of 18 to 22-year-old kids sexualized is like saying the sky is blue. And to paint them in such a negative light and to use that one aspect to paint them and not to paint with any of the other colors that represent them, does the students and the alums a great service. So, to answer your question, I don't know if there is, the university certainly would not admit its band has a quote unquote sexualized culture because, they said that left with me, which is craziness as well. But, I don't know if they would say it still exists today or not.
If somebody came to you and said, should I go to the Ohio State University, what would be your answer? Hello, John? I think we lost him. Hopefully we'll get him back here momentarily. We were chatting with John Waters. That was an interesting place for the interview to cut out. But I think we're going to get him back here. Okay. John, I think we lost connection there for a second.
Sorry about that, Scott. I think I lost you. But you started to say, should I go to the Ohio State University?
Yeah, if somebody asked that question of you, or would you go back for a game?
Oh, I certainly would go back for a game. I love Ohio State, and I always have, and I always will. I have a certain different opinion about its administration and the choices that it made. But I love the institution itself, and I would certainly go back.
Two very quick questions here at the end. If the university had not agreed to not seeking reimbursement for their expenses in this trial, in this process, would you have dropped the case?
I think, Scott, that was just one factor that kind of fed into the overall decision-making process. I can't say that, if they said no to that, would we still be engaged in the lawsuit? I'm not even sure. That's just one of the agreement points that we came to with them.
And the final point, everybody remembers you for what you did with the iPads, and there were big stories, and you were on the cover of magazines, and it was a great time, and it is a big university, and they won the national championship that year. Not that Heidelberg's not great, but do you look back at that now? Because it seems like you do feel that it wasn't right. Your firing is not right, and you still stand by that, that you should still be there in some way. Is that a hard pill to swallow?
It certainly is a hard pill to swallow. I believe I should still be there. But the fact is that I'm not. And so, you know, that my recourse is to do what I did at Ohio State anywhere else. And music is music. I have the great opportunity at Heidelberg to make music with great students. You know, Ohio State has great students, but, you know, they're equally as great at Heidelberg. And there are students everywhere. So being able to be back in the game, so to speak, is really the blessing for me. And yeah, you know, I am, this will forever scar me, you know, as part of my career. And, you know, we as musicians, I think, wear our feelings on our sleeves sometime. I was totally invested in my job. So yeah, I will forever feel badly about what has happened. But the great thing here is I've been able to move on from that situation and continue to do great things with great students.
Parting question here, finally, because of that statement, do you think people see this as an admission of guilt for what you did? When the university says we prevailed.
Oh, no, I don't think this is an admission of guilt at all. Scott, you know, we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, the university probably millions, in defending our side of the story. I don't think anybody feels I'm guilty. Had I gone away without a sound in the beginning, I think people could maybe draw that conclusion. But, you know, we fought these guys as long as we could. We exhausted every financial resource we had and went after the university. And even though we didn't get the truth out in a courtroom in front of a jury, we got the truth out in the court of public opinion. And, you know, and at the end of the day, that's the final chapter about me and Ohio State ends with the fact that I stood up for what was right, what was true, what was honest, and I stood up for the students and the thousands of band alums who gave so much to that place.
John Waters. John, you've always been so kind to us over the year, and this is not going to be the last time we talk. I'm going to take you up on that invitation sometime to come down and or come up, I guess, and see the band, and maybe someday we'll see each other in the studio again.
Absolutely, Scott. Tiffin's only 45 minutes from Marion, so come on up. We'd love to have you.
Hey, thank you, John.
All right, thank you.
Best of luck. Bye-bye.
Bye.
John Waters. Very interesting story, exclusively here on WWGH Radio. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
19. So you can count them up.
Do you think that it's good that Bob Dole is the only...